Picture this, a celebrity not just because of one talent, but almost too many to count. The athleticism of a Deion Sanders, the vocal agility of a Nat King Cole, and the charismatic activism of a Harry Belafonte. Paul Robeson had all of that, and it made him a global star.
The gospel trains are coming, I hear it just at hand. Hear the car wheels rumbling and rumbling through the land.
Despite his status as one of the towering figures of the early 20th century, Robeson was almost relegated to the back pages of history. We'll tell you more about that in a minute. But this week, Robeson is back in the spotlight. His complete recordings from 1925 to 1947 are being released to accompany a new book called Paul Robeson, Voice of Freedom. The set features essays by Robeson's granddaughter, Susan, and Shauna Redman. She is a Columbia University professor, and she told me about how and why Robeson became such a cultural icon.
In the 1940s, he was the most famous Black man in the entire world, and that for his incredible stardom, but also for his ability to connect with people in ways that they would understand. He had an unwavering commitment to working people's, to the rights to education for people, and so would use those as opportunities to get to the root of what made us all human.
Some wanted freedom and some wanted riches. Some liked to loaf while others dug ditches.
He was born in 1898. His father, as I understand it, was actually an enslaved person. Paul first gets noticed as a football star at Rutgers, and I mean a star, but then he goes to law school. How did he end up becoming a performer?
After meeting his life partner, Eslanda Good Robeson, he was finally convinced to take his turn on the stage and started doing very local theater productions. And it's for his inability to whistle during one of his roles on stage that he was encouraged by the play's director to sing. And that starts his career as a singer.
Sometimes I'm up, sometimes I'm down. Oh, yes, Lord.
His repertoire includes a lot of styles. It includes popular standards. It includes classical music, political songs. But then the spirituals become some of his most powerful recordings.
The spirituals were at the very root of his vocal repertoire. All of the concerns, the stories, the elements of hope and perseverance that ground the spirituals were very, very close to him. These songs represented the best of who African-descended peoples were.
Old Man River, that old man river, he must know something, but don't say nothing.
I want to talk about Old Man River. He became world famous as Joe in the 1920s in this musical Showboat with his version of Old Man River. But he had a kind of complicated relationship with it, and at some point he kind of made it his own.
The kinds of language that was written into that song with proficient use of the N-word, he understood that he was going to have to reconfigure that song if it were going to continue in his repertoire. So he changed the song to match not only more contemporary representations of Blackness, but also more contemporary concerns around war and around resilience and resistance. And so the song is forever attached to him because he made it uniquely and powerfully his.
I'm tired of living and fear of dying, but Old Man River, he just keeps rolling along.
His recording career essentially ground to a halt in 1948. Why did that happen?
So he offered a speech at a peace conference in Paris. This was at the moment of the height of a second Red Scare, where the threat of accusation of communism was felling entire careers. He becomes state's enemy number one. The press has turned against him. His established concert dates are canceled. His recording contracts are canceled. His passport is revoked. And of course, it's during this period that he offers multiple famed concerts where he sings across the U.S.-Canadian border as a means of refusing the restrictions of the State Department on his travel.
That is kind of crazy. Just set the scene for us. He literally stands and sings across the border, basically.
So in the early 1950s, he's invited to come to Canada. He stopped at the border, and rather than turn back and head back home, they decide that they're going to offer the concert anyway. And from the bed of a pickup truck, Paul Robeson sings via microphone to those thousands of people amassed on the other side. He made a comment to his friend, Harry Belafonte, who identified himself as a disciple of Paul Robeson. And he made a comment to Harry, "Get them to sing your songs and they'll want to know who you are."
"Takes more than guns to kill a man," says Joe, "I didn't die."
Why do you think it is that he is not better known, given what an enormous celebrity he was?
I think it's plainly and simply because he was dangerous. He was singing to people, which made his language, which made his political positions so much more enticing, so much more beautiful and easily received for people. And that's dangerous for those systems of power and influence. But people still carry his name. There are still streets named after him. People are still listening to his voice. People are still wanting to be in a community where Paul Robeson lives.
The collection is called Paul Robeson, Voice of Freedom. Professor Shauna Redmond, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, nobody knows the trouble I've seen. Nobody knows my sorrow.